Hot wax dripping, honey, what do you say? I got a brand new podcast that I want to play. It's Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette, joined as always by the grumpiest man in North America, John Mariano. John, what's bugging you this week?
Corey, can you tell me what it takes to find a new podcast partner?
You know what? Just put the call out there. I'm sure dozens of people are going to be lining up to do a podcast with you.
I mean, I'll take like three people say yes. I'd be happy.
Well, you know what? Maybe our guest this week will take you up on that. He's been on the show before. He's an absolute podcasting legend from the Deep Dive Podcasting Network. It's the one and only Scott Haskins. Scott, how's it going, my friend?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Scott. Oh, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me after I thought maybe I wouldn't be invited back on the show after horrible pick.
Well, it was not a horrible pick. I mean, it's not on the list anymore, but it wasn't a horrible pick at all.
Would it last like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe?
I don't know. You got to ask Corey. He's in charge of the lists.
It lasted a while.
Corey, why did you allow that to get taken off the list?
Because I was beat down. I still suffer from PTSD from that moment. You are such a bully, and you had just kicked me and kicked me and kicked me that finally I gave up.
Scott, you see my hands right now, Scott? Because the people listening cannot see my hands. I have no control of the list, right? It's Corey's screen. Corey, you can see Corey's screen sharing right now, right? Like, we're going to pull back the curtain. I have zero control. I make suggestions. And then if Corey takes my suggestion, it's kind of on him.
Well, there's suggestions, but there's also suggestions with an air of strength and almost threatening behavior behind them, which could influence how that suggestion is carried out.
I don't know what you're talking about. Like, here in New York, we're very kind and forthcoming. I had a lynx in my neighborhood a couple of weeks ago. Like, there's a lot of wildlife out here. My kids play hockey. We're very friendly around here. Up by Corey, they have all kinds of crime going on right now. Crazy stuff is going on, right? They're a little agitated. Corey's kind of more along the lines of, I think, what you might be talking about.
Well, and hockey is a gentleman's sport.
Or gentle ladies, as my girls play.
Very true. Very true. I would like to make, I'm not going to try and influence you to put it back on the list, but I would like to make an argument maybe for just future thought process why it should have stayed on the list. If you're going for a mixtape that shows a well-rounded, here's what this band is all about in all forms, I think an instrumental would be an important thing to have on there, because you have Steven Tyler popping up on every song, even when there's no need for vocals, just letting people know he didn't get fired during the recording of the song. It would be good to have a song that kind of shows what the band can do, because you have a lot of talented musicians that are kind of often slid to the side to let Steven shine a little bit. So based on that, I think it would be nice to have at least an instrumental or something on the list that shows a little bit more what the band's capable of.
And to that point, I'd just like to point out Brad Whitford played the lead on that song. And we don't have a lot of tracks on the mixtape currently where Brad Whitford played the lead. It'd be kind of nice to have a Brad Whitford lead on there.
Corey, I know you're anxious to chime in and make me sound like the bad guy here.
Because it's easy.
I agree with Scott here, because it wasn't my call to let one of the five band members end each one of our shows. Like, we could. No, it wasn't. It was totally yours, dude. That's your. I don't even produce the show. Scott, where are my hands?
Well, what's I only with see you a couple of fingers.
All that proves is that you're not masturbating right now for the first time in months.
No, it doesn't, because I can still use my feet.
Oh, okay. I forgot. Unfortunate Zoom call from 3 weeks ago.
I'm getting visuals that I will never get out of my head now.
Welcome to my hell.
Yeah, you do a lot more shows with them than I do.
Unfortunately, I do too many, apparently.
But I love that as much as you guys keep talking about finding another host, you guys work together so well. You are the Abbott and Costello of podcasting.
I love that. I want to get that put on a t-shirt.
Do it.
Yeah. I mean, if only one of us could design shirts.
Yeah, we need some guy who kind of knows the Photoshop, who maybe even worked for Photoshop. Do you know anybody, John?
Yeah, Corey, like you've done a great job with the graphics so far on Twitter, so I think you should do it.
I had to. I'm the only one doing anything for this show. You don't even do any prep.
Oh, you finally admit it. Scott, you heard it here first. Corey does everything, and I have nothing to do with what gets taken off the next
You come up with every idea. You come up with every idea. You have just as much input as what's on the mixtape as what isn't, and you goddamn well know it, sir.
I don't know what you're talking about. Listen, I'm just happy Scott's back because now I have a witness to your tyranny.
To my tyranny, thank you.
I don't want to read into this too much, but I think what Corey just said was you're Henry Ford and he's the factory.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Thank you. From a Michigan native. I appreciate that, sir. Thank you. And then one job John does have is to remind me of the sponsor, and he didn't. So I'm just going to go ahead. I know last week I said John was going to do the copy, but he can't be arsed to do anything. So I'll just read it here. Pop Rockin' Radio. This is Ken Knapsack's Pop Rockin' Radio. The big hits, album cuts, and B-sides from the rock and pop world that make up the soundtracks of our lives. Look for live shows and make requests. Sing, dance, and celebrate the music with the Pop Rockin' Radio community.
See, he doesn't even let me save a copy, Scott. Like, it's not even my fault at this point.
I didn't see you jumping in, though, to be fair.
I tried to, but he goes so fast. It is like trying to outrun the Flash when you deal with Corey.
My Lord. Okay.
Well, the Flash always wins, though, so.
There you go. Right. I really like Scott. We got to get him on more shows. He's sticking up for me.
I am all for Scott taking my place on most of these podcasts.
No, wow. We'll make a three-man panel. What do you think?
There you go.
Yeah.
I can record 17 shows a day like you guys do.
Let's start with that Van Halen show that we'll turn into a three-man panel, and then we'll go from there.
Now, that Van Halen show is not worth the effort. It's almost done, by the way. You know, we're 40-some episodes in. We only go to 131, then we're done. So,
is that how that works?
Yeah.
Wow. That's all they recorded was 131 songs? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
It seems like they'd been – had they taken long hiatuses between recording?
There was a few. Obviously, there was no break between Dave and Sammy, but between Sammy and Gary Cherone, there was a big break. And then obviously a huge break between Van Halen 3 and A Different Kind of Truth. So,
wow. I didn't realize that because they've been around forever.
Yeah, it's only like 12, 13 albums. Like not a big output. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, while I have Scott here, because I have somebody who might be able to take my side on an idea, and not even an idea for one of my shows, I think you guys should do 132 episodes because I have an idea.
Oh, Lord.
I think that you should cover Wolfgang Van Halen at the Taylor Hawkins tribute on one of your episodes.
I've been trying to get Mark to just do that entire album, the Mammoth WVH album. It's one of my favorite albums released in the last 10 years. And what he did at the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert, phenomenal. Tears in my eyes. Just effortlessly how he goes out there and just rips into On Fire and then Hot for Teacher. Like it was nothing. Nothing. The guy is just immensely talented. I was so moved by that whole day, actually. I sat there for 6 hours and watched the whole damn thing and loved every minute of it.
Yeah, I would vote for that. I think that's a good idea, John.
Thank you. See? So now, Corey, you have to do 132 episodes.
I'm down with doing 143 and doing that whole album and talking about the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert.
I mean, Scott can see right here, like I tried to put in like one little idea and Corey just shat all over it. And now he's doing his own thing anyway. So I have no power at all.
Hmm.
Enjoy your time with John, Scott. I'm leaving.
All right, so let's do the movie again.
There you go. We're putting the movie back on the mixtape just to piss off John.
You know what, though? Scott has a great point, and we do have more room now, Corey.
Yes, we do.
So I really think we should put an instrumental back on the list.
Okay, well, maybe we overlooked it
definitely last week.
Yeah, we're at 9, which is the full one side, unless you want to. You think the movie is short enough that it's going to be the coda to side A, or are you taking something off to put the movie back on?
Oh no, we gotta take something off of there. Mm-hmm. But look, I'm making the decision to put it back on the list, and we brought Scott in as a guest. I want to give Scott some leeway and power here. And we, you know, this is unprecedented to put something really back on the list like this. Scott, what would you like to take off the list? We have Sick as a Dog, Seasons of Wither.
Songs on here.
Yeah.
I would probably say Sick as a Dog. Just, I mean, if you ask me 5 minutes from now, I might pick something else, to be fair, but initially that would be my first call.
Is it because we have too many animal songs going on? Like we have Sick as a Dog, we have Rats in the Cellar, we have Walk in the Dog. Do you feel like we're just representing too many animals right now?
The playlist does have a bit of a barnyard aroma to it at the moment. Yeah, it does. But I mean, just thinking in terms of the songs, I think Sick as a Dog is probably the most, I don't know, just in the moment, it feels like it's the most generic of all the songs that are on here. And could easily be replaced with something else.
Well, there you go, Corey. So the movie is back on. Now, I've been accused of taking too much power, but all I've done, Scott, is give power up on this show so far, right?
On this episode, yes. I had no intention of expecting you guys would put the movie back on. I was just thinking of you know, down the road for the thought process of making the overall best Aerosmith tape. But thank you. I think that song is a valid song.
But if it were up to Corey, the movie would still be off. It was my idea to put the
How do you know on. This? I haven't said anything in 5 minutes because you've been yakking. How do you know what I would do?
Because you didn't do it.
I didn't get an opportunity because you took over the show like you so often do. Here's a thought. While we got Scott here, let's sequence side A. We have a full 9 songs on here. I think the movie makes a great coda to the end of side A. I would put that near the end. What should kick off currently side A of our mixtape, John? Do you have any thoughts?
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Rats in the Cellar, and it fires on all cylinders kicking off the gate. But
that's a rocker. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my preference.
I don't mind that. Scott, do you have any thoughts?
I think that would be good. You know, going from just coming on a fresh side, because people don't always flip the tape over right away. So sometimes you want the second side to kind of be like, maybe you haven't listened to the second side yet. Maybe it's been a while since you listened to the first. So you got to kind of come out with some good rock to draw people in. I think that's a great choice.
I agree. Let's put Rats first. That's awesome. I would say maybe Moving Out second. The very first song that Steven Tyler Joe Perry ever wrote, I think it would segue nicely maybe from Rats in the Cellar to go second track. What do you think?
I'm nodding my head. Yes.
Okay, good. I actually don't mind the way it's kind of right now. Rats in the Cellar, Moving Out, Girl Keeps Coming Apart. Maybe a good third track, right?
Well, I was thinking No More, only because sometimes for a third track, you kind of want to slow it down just a little bit and then come back with a little bit of power.
That's a good idea. Let's do that. I think John might be frozen. So we're just going to go ahead and sequence this whole thing while he's gone. What do you say, Scott?
Do you mean him on the screen or him in real life?
Both, actually. I don't know what it is. We can actually say whatever. He's back. Fuck. I was going to say, he's frozen. We can talk about it however we want, but no, he's back.
My computer does not like Zoom, is what it boils down to.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was your internet connection. But while you were gone, we kind of settled on Scott and I, Rats in the Cellar, Moving Out, and then No More is the third track. Girl Keeps Coming Apart is the fourth track. And then Bone to Bone, Seasons of Wither, Moving Out, Spaced, Walking the Dog in the movie. What do you think?
Why do we have Moving Out on there twice?
Well, we didn't like that place, so we're moving out again.
It's that good, John, that's why.
Yeah, there you go.
I really thought you were putting Billy Joel on this tape, too.
When are we starting our Billy Joel podcast?
I don't know. I got like 6 more ideas before we get to Billy. Billy grew up in my backyard, basically.
You have no idea, Scott. Every once in a while, I get a phone call out of the blue with John saying, I got another idea for a podcast. I'm like, Jesus Christ, really? I'm already doing 3. Isn't that enough?
No.
But Scott has already agreed to be on the Aerosmith show, 3-man panel. So
that's right.
That takes a little bit of the pressure off now.
I mean, this is great. I can skip a lot of episodes now.
By the way, I'm not kidding. If Scott wanted to come back and be a regular, I'd be all for that.
I'd totally do that. Yeah. I don't have a lot of knowledge about Aerosmith, but I would certainly be happy to experience a lot of these songs for the first time listening to them with you guys.
And that's fantastic, because John and I think for the most part, I've heard pretty much, well, John famously hasn't really heard anything past like Nine Lives. So he's rediscovering those. I've listened to everything. So to have somebody who hasn't really listened to much, I think might be an interesting perspective.
Well, you know, it was one great thing about doing the Magicians podcast, because I did not know every one of Uriah Heep's albums. There were some albums I had never heard. So going through 24 albums, songs that I knew that I'd been listening to for 30 years and knew every note of, versus songs I was actually doing a first time reaction, was a really nice variety.
That's why I love your show. And I'm listening to just kind of the newer stuff they've put out. I haven't even got to the older stuff that I haven't experienced from Uriah Heep yet. So I can't wait to get into that.
It's a lot of variety of styles. Their 70s was very different from their 80s, was very different from the 2000s. They're really heavy now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really awesome. I really dig Uriah Heep sound right now.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I really am. But I can see John's getting bored. So what are you saying?
I'm not getting bored.
I can tell you're masturbating again.
First of all, when I'm masturbating, I make a much different face.
Yes, we're all too aware.
Because that doesn't seem like you're enjoying it very much.
No, because when I masturbate, I try to catch it when I'm done.
He's an angry masturbator. It's really a sight to behold. He scowls more than normal.
It's a scowl. It's a scowl. Open mouth scowl is probably the best way to describe it.
Like a Mr. Bill face.
That's right. There's a reference not a lot of people are going to get, except the three old farts on the panel. That's awesome.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, no!
All right. So we're going to play an Aerosmith song here tonight, hopefully at some point, and we're going to go off of Scott's Die. Now, it's changed a little bit from last show. We took the movie off, obviously, because we covered that one. And we also changed another track. So we're going to go through the six tracks here that Scott put on his Die. We have Round and Round, You See Me Crying, which is a single, so that would actually go on the top 10 list. Uncle Salty, which is a new one he put on there tonight, which I'm very excited about. Hangman Jury, one of the absolute best from Permanent Vacation, and a track they just did. They performed their first concert, Aerosmith did, in 2 years, just the other night, and Hangman Jury was in the set list, so that's very nice. Exciting. I'm Down, a great Beatles cover, and What It Takes, the live cut from A Little South of Sanity, which... one of my favorite tracks off that live album, and John and I discussed before, one of our top maybe five all-time Aerosmith songs. So I'm very glad to see it on the mixtape tonight. John, what is your take on the six songs we have in contention here?
I mean, I'm really hoping Hangman Jury shows up. I love the representation of Permanent Vacation on this Die. And What It Takes, you know, way to spoil everybody by saying like it's a top five song, because why even do a show at this point? Like, we know it's going to be on like a bunch of stuff.
Good night, folks. We're out of here. No. Scott, maybe tell us why these six tracks stuck out to you.
Well, you know, I'm really only familiar with two Aerosmith albums, Permanent Vacation and Toys in the Attic. Obviously, I'm not that familiar in my brain right now. So those are the main ones. And then, of course, you know, some of the hits I know as well. These songs in particular, like You See Me Crying, has always been one that as soon as it's over, I just put it right back on and listen to it again. Round and Round has such an amazing feel to it, especially the last section of the song. I just kind of don't want it to end. You know, every one of these songs just has a special connection to me somehow.
That's awesome. I'm very much looking forward to getting into this one. Just taking a look at the set list here from that show on September 4th. And Hangman Jury definitely was on there. Big 10-inch record, kind of a surprise they closed the show with. They did Back in the Saddle, Same Old Song and Dance, Ragdoll, Mama Kin, Remember Walking in the Sand from the Greatest Hits album, their very first Greatest Hits album, which... that's kind of a deep cut for them. Stop Messing Around, which that's the Joe song. They have to do a Joe song every show. And for the last decade, it's been Stop Messing Around. Hangman Jury, Season of Wither, Living on the Edge, Full Circle. First time since 2013 that was played from Nine Lives. Crying, The Other Side, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Love in an Elevator, Sweet Emotion, Dude Looks Like a Lady. Then the encore was Dream On, Walk This Way, and Big 10 Inch. So yeah, pretty cool set list and a pretty cool dive we got going here tonight. So John, what do you say? If we're ready, let's give this sucker a roll.
If you want it, go for it.
And we are going to come up with What It Takes from A Little South of Sanity. Here we go, a live cut here tonight. Guaranteed to go on the mixtape right now because we only have two live tracks on there right now, Sweet Emotion and Mother Popcorn, which is the other song from a special guest that we put back on the mixtape, which we did last week. John, we've already kind of spoiled it, but what are your impressions of What It Takes?
I mean, What It Takes to me is one of the great breakup songs of all time, right? People mistake it as like a power battle love song. I see people dancing to it, couples dancing to it. I'm like, you know, the cynic in me wants to count the days till that couple breaks up, because that's kind of what the song's about.
Yeah.
But it's such a beautiful song. So I get it. Like, I get why you want to dance with your girlfriends, or your wives or whomever. My advice to you is, if you choose to listen to the song with your significant other, don't plan on it lasting too long.
And I remember 1989, 1990, this was used in a lot of weddings. And I kind of had the similar reaction, like, that marriage isn't going to last. Listen to the lyrics. It's not a love song.
I think that's the thing, is that people took the title and thought it was more of an inspirational, this is what it takes for us to be here, to stay together, where it's exactly the opposite of that. It's, what does it take for me to get you out of my damn head?
Exactly. It also had one of my favorite Aerosmith videos of all time, with the band performing almost Blues Brothers style at the old honky tonk bar with the chicken wire, doing kind of their honky tonk song, What It Takes. This was released in February 26, 1990. The B-side was Monkey on My Back, written by Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, and Desmond Child, one of the big contributors for Aerosmith lyric-wise. I don't want to spoil it, because we're going to listen to the live take here, but anyone knows, John and I knows, that Pump is a seminal album for both of us, and this is one of the best tracks on it. So what do you say, boys? Let's get into a little South of Sanity and What It Takes.
There goes my old girlfriend.
Sorry, were you cueing me, John, or were you just into it?
I was dancing along to Steven Tyler, but it's also nice, like, now that you bring it up, you know, Scott, are you okay that the band tunes out and lets Mr. Tyler rock the beginning of the song? Or does the musician, music lover in you, who wants the bandmates forward, prefer having the band start the song and then the singer chime in, maybe eventually or never?
You know, in a case like this, I think this is actually a great way to start this song. I love that delay that we're hearing on his voice. I love that level of reverb. It's a great introduction, because it's saying, I'm just going to start this, and within 2 seconds, everybody will know what song we're about to do. And then when the band kicks in, it's just going to be that much more powerful. I like mixing it up live a little bit instead of just having the songs always perform the way they are in the studio. I think my issue with Steven is more like, he's just always got to make sounds and stuff, even during guitar solos and things, where it's like, just let the guitar, like, this is his moment. Let him have it. But in a case like this, I think this is a fantastic opening.
That's fair. And especially for this song, because like John said, it's a song about, you know, breakups and about unrequited love, and very different from the other song Desmond Child wrote with these guys, which was Angel from Permanent Vacation. But they wanted to make sure, they didn't feel like Angel was really indicative of the Aerosmith kind of vibe, so they wanted to put more Aerosmith into the power ballad, if you will, from Pump, and that became the country western tone of What It Takes.
I really like to believe that they were going out with Angel during Permanent Vacation, and by the time Pump came out, they broke up. And
it's the same girl.
That's awesome.
Man,
that relationship did not last long. It ended horribly.
Another diamond ring and all those late night promises, I guess they don't mean a thing. So baby, what's the story? Did you find another man? Well, is it easy to sleep in the bed we made? When you don't look back, I guess the feelings start to fade away.
One thing we had to consider when it comes to live tracks is the crowd. And I love that he takes that pause and the crowd kind of builds, because they know what's coming. And that's one of my favorite parts about this version specifically of What It Takes, which, you know, intros maybe even better than the album version, because I love this a cappella version. And then we're going to get to it after I start playing the song again when the song kicks back in. But the crowd and that slow build, one of my favorite parts of a live track.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really nice about this, too, is that he has a little bit of room to go off tempo. He can speed up a couple words. He can slow down because the music isn't being affected by it. So you have a little more control over this. But the crowd, he's got them in the palm of his hand. You can hear it in every seat that they're just waiting and waiting, and he's just got them.
100% great. And John and I both seen Aerosmith. John's seen him a few different times. And that's what makes Steven Tyler one of the best frontmen in rock, wouldn't you say, John?
When you can control a crowd like this, just with the pauses in what you're going to sing, right? Like, I just, you know, I'm going to keep referencing this Taylor Hawkins thing that happened this weekend. But we just watched Brian May command Wembley Stadium and get them to become his frontman. Right. There are certain rockers, whether like it's a rock star, right? And Steven Tyler is a rock star. And if you could command a crowd like this and just own them, you're a rock star. And that's where we get to witness audibly right now.
I used to feel your vow, but now it's gone. Now you're back on the street like you didn't miss a beat. Yeah. Tell me what it takes to let you go. Tell me how the pain's a burden your love. Tell me how it is that you can't sleep in the night without thinking you lost everything that was good in your life to the toss of.
So this is our first lyric change on the live version. On the studio version, of course, he goes right into Tell Me What It Takes to Let You Go. John, are you a fan of when singers kind of mix it up either intentionally or maybe they just kind of forgot the lyric at the time?
I'm actually a huge fan of it, right? Like, I like live TV. I like when things happen, whether it's intentional or not. I like when things change up. I like when you surprise me and something's different. So that's why I'm at the show, for stuff like this.
Do you guys remember the show Solid Gold that was on TV back in the 80s? They basically played the record and had the band out there with instruments, making it look like they weren't even plugged in. When I go to see a live show, I want to hear a different version of the song. I want a different tempo. I want different inflections. I want a different solo. If I wanted the record, I'd stay home and listen to the record.
100%. Top of the Pops in the UK was another one where artists, especially like a North American artist, would get over there and were aghast that, you know, they were playing a drum kit that had those rubber cymbals because they didn't have to make any noise because they were just going to play the album track. So I 100% agree with you.
I saw Guns N' Roses play in my hometown in Madison Square Garden. And during the guitar solo for November Rain, Slash kicked into the Godfather theme in the heart of New York. And I don't think it gets any better than that.
What a great place to see a show. The other thing, too, I want to point out, I really like about this is that there was no drum roll intro. The band just kicked in. That made it so much more powerful to me. The one thing I think it's lacking for me is one of the things that I particularly love about this song specifically is when Steven backs his vocals up, Tell Me What It Takes to Let You Go, when he's double tracking that in the studio, that has so much power to it. And I feel like without another voice in here, it sounds a little bit thin. But that's the difference between listening on the record and being there. I'm not in the moment. I'm not caught up in the emotion and the energy and the crowd of all of this. That's why, in general, I don't listen to a lot of live music for that reason, because I don't feel the connection that the crowd does.
Yeah, and it's really a great point, because Aerosmith is one of those bands where, because Steven does double a lot of his vocals when that doesn't happen live, and they had a touring keyboard player that would sometimes sing underneath, but it just wasn't the same. And you're right, that element is really missing. And you can say that with a lot of bands, but Aerosmith is really really prevalent for that, because when Joe sings backup, or when he sings, like, it's not good, especially lately. Like, he's just a very different vocal style than Steven Tyler. So you're right. It maybe doesn't have that kind of same punch, to the point where I think Steven Tyler might even be playing with a track right now of his background vocal underneath.
So I want to take a minute and kind of defend the band and Steven for a minute and put the onus on the crowd, right? The crowd should be what Scott's looking for and filling that void right now. And they are not singing along, and they're cheering, but they're kind of dead. And I want to point my finger at the crowd and listen, if you're in an Aerosmith crowd and you're not singing along, that's on you.
You know, that's a fair point. Yep. 100%. And
I guarantee when they're singing Walk This Way, the crowd is singing along every word with that song. I guarantee it.
Absolutely.
That's a great point.
Yes. And John had referenced the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert. Look at a song like My Hero. 80,000 people were singing My Hero along with Dave Grohl during that song. So great point, John. That's the last time I'm complimenting you on this episode. So imagine that playing at a wedding with the bride and groom dancing along. It's like whenever they play, Good Riddance, Time of Your Life at like a graduation. It's like, listen to the lyrics. It's not the song you think it is.
I had a friend who's a karaoke host, and at their wedding, they each sang a song, and she picked I Can't Believe I Shaved My Legs for This. Very fitting. I want to add too, the mix is not the best. I think we could use a little bit more guitar. I don't know if they're playing with a keyboard player. I'm not really hearing a piano like you would in this song. But I think musically what I'm hearing, I would just like maybe a little bit more balance to it.
No, that's fair. And I think because this was kind of an album to kind of finish off the Geffen contract, it may not have had the attention and the care that it kind of deserved. They were just kind of rushing through the Geffen contract to get to their Columbia deal. So little things like that. This is probably just a raw mix right off the board, I would think, pretty much.
I think everybody did that with Geffen when their contract was ending, didn't they? Tell me what it takes to let you go. Tell me how the pain supposed to go.
And you kind of get in the background, but one of the things that makes this song is the accordion. And we didn't get a lot of that early. You kind of hear it kind of muted in the background there. I don't know if they had an accordion player on this tour, but it's one of the things that Joe Perry went on to say, and I quote, the thing that made it for me was when Fairbairn and producer Bruce Fairbairn put an accordion on it. That gave it the flavor it needed. Otherwise, it would just have been nice chords and nice changes.
Corey, do you know how much it costs to bring an accordion player with you on tour?
No, but I can't imagine it's that much.
I would imagine your choices are only eating green M&Ms or having an accordion player. And I need my green M&Ms on tour.
Really? Oh, they don't get paid. that is a great point. And you're talking about Aerosmith. They're selling out the biggest arenas all over the country, if not the world. I can't imagine that they wouldn't be able to reasonably afford that without taking a huge hit. But to do that for one song, you're probably better off having your keyboard player covering that on a good accordion patch than you would be hiring a guy to just come out and do that one song.
And that's probably what it was. Like, it's different than the Permanent Vacation tour when they had the Tower of Power horn section tour with them, because they did a ton of songs with horns on them, right? This is the only song that I can think of offhand that has accordion on it.
Yeah, I would say that's probably more likely. It's probably the keyboard player.
Yeah, I've worked for corporations that have canceled Pizza Friday. So I think that, you know, arguing how much money they have is kind of a moot point. If they want to cut a corner, they're going to cut a corner.
That's very true.
Tell me how it is that you can't sleep in the night without thinking you lost everything that was So there you are, Scott. That proves your point. That's Steven Tyler just making noise to prove he's still there.
I love the guitar sound, though. I mean, they kept it very true to the studio version, which I really love the sound on that. I think they got something really quite special. And I like that they did that for the live song, too.
100%. I love that guitar tone on there. And Joe Perry, I thought, was killing it. John, what do you think?
I was a big fan of Steven coming in and supporting his friends at the end of the guitar solo. I also appreciate a guy who lets you know what? I'm going to take a break. I'm going to let you know here's where the guitars play by yelling guitar before I'm going to stop singing for repeat.
I love that. Yeah, whenever a lead singer shouts out guitar before the guitar solo, that's, oh, I love that shit.
Yeah, I did that on a song years and years ago on my comedy album. And when every time I listen back to it, I kind of cringe. I'm like, I can't believe I put that in there.
Okay. Scott, if you do another comedy album, can I make a recommendation for you?
Yes.
Do the exact same thing, only instead of saying the word guitar, I want you to yell keytar.
Ooh. I was going to say slide whistle, but keytar, those are cool.
Even worse, yell bass. Who the hell ever calls for the bass player to do something?
I won't add that I'm a bass player.
Les Claypool yells bass.
He would. Yeah, absolutely.
He would. I will agree that the harmony did sound very nice. Steven sounded very nice with the guitar. But again, like, you've just been singing nonstop. You started off the song. You sang two verses by yourself. You know, let some people in the band shine for a minute. It's okay.
Exactly. Scott, I'm kind of curious, what do you think about the song structure? I know Brad Whitford kind of went out and said that, you know, it started out just a little keyboard song, but they kind of felt that there was something special about it. So they approached it in a much different manner than they would just kind of your standard keyboard type ballad.
Yeah, it definitely has a lot more to it. I think there's a lot of nice fill-in from the guitar that we're really not hearing now. You can hear it more on the studio version. The accordion is an excellent addition because it adds an unexpected and really unique dynamic that makes the song even more memorable. You know, especially at the end when the accordion kind of goes off a little bit when Steven's just riffing. I really love the way that comes together. I'm curious to see how they do that here. But the structure itself, yeah, it's not just... It doesn't really just feel like a standard verse, chorus, bridge, solo ballad. It's just I can't explain what it is, but it does feel a little bit unique and non-standard.
And it's weird because Steven Tyler's, his attitude towards it originally was, I'll do a lot of ballads. If that's what it takes, that's kind of where the title came from. If that's what it takes to get a kid to listen to F-I-N-E Fine or Monkey on My Back, then I'll do it. But it kind of evolved from like the Angels style ballad into a much different kind of ballad, especially in 1989. And I found that really refreshing.
I would agree with that. Tell me that you're happy that you're on.
Okay, Johnny, you and I have had some heartbreak in our life. How fucking great is that verse?
Look, this is my second favorite breakup song of all time.
And I know you're first, and yeah, I totally get that, but...
Wait, does Scott know my first?
I don't know your first.
So, Scott, you know, going slightly off-brand, I also listen to a lot of Type O Negative, which is probably another podcast I'd like to do at some point in my life. And they have a song called Unsuccessfully Coping with the Natural Beauty of Infidelity, also known as I Know You're Fucking Someone Else.
And here I thought you were going to pick a Debbie Gibson tune, which is another podcast you could do.
100%.
Lost in the pod.
If I could do a Mall Tour 1986 podcast, I think I would.
You could. She's doing cruise ships now, I think.
There you go.
That's sweet.
With Tiffany.
I gotta go on that cruise.
I have to say, I love the level of emotion that we're hearing in the vocals, because again, like when you're singing ballads and you've sung them over and over and over, you're doing it live, you might not really be able to tap into the level that you were at when you recorded it or when you first wrote it. And I think he's really bringing it here.
You know, that's a great point, because on this same album, they do a version of Angel that sounds like just Paint by Numbers. Here I am doing a ballad, no emotion in it, but I 100% agree with you. He is invested in this, and especially in this verse. Tell me that you're happy that you're on your own. Tell me that it's better when you're all alone. Tell me that your body doesn't miss my touch. Tell me that my loving didn't mean that much. Tell me you ain't dying when you're crying for me. Like, that's Steven Tyler lyric writing at its best.
Mm-hmm. But if John's right, and this is the same girl, it's probably a lot harder to sing Angel after this happened.
Yeah. No, that's 100%. Yeah, because they do Angel earlier in the set and earlier on the album. And yeah, he's probably just like, fuck that bitch. And then when you get to What It Takes, it's like, yeah, he's putting his whole heart and soul into it.
Yeah.
That's got to be canon now, John. That was a great observation. I 100% believe that the girl from Angel is the girl from What It Takes.
It's probably also the same girl from Girl Keeps Coming Apart.
I still want all of that to be true. Tell me what it takes to let you.
Tell me who's to blame for throwing rice, John.
I don't know. Probably the jerks on table 8.
But we all kind of, oh yeah, when that build was happening, John and I, because we knew it was coming, it was just like, Steven slows it down, and then he takes that pause, lets the crowd get into it, and then brings them up when he sings Dice. Very powerful moment.
And I think, now I said in the first one, when they did this at the beginning, that I was glad they didn't start it with a drum fill. I like that they used the drum fill on this one. It didn't just all come in again. But yeah. Did you guys notice that we either hear the accordion or we hear the piano? So I'm going to say that accordion is their keyboard player.
100%. Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't pick that out, but would not shock me, because just what I know of the band, yeah, I would think 100% that's the keyboard player.
Mm-hmm. Sounds really good. I'm not a huge fan of live versions of songs, but I have to say this is really good.
Now, originally you kind of thought it was missing some of that power that the studio version did. What are you thinking now as we are winding down here with a minute 10 left?
I still think the verses could use a little bit of extra kick, but just because it doesn't feel that same power. But I will say, when he's kind of going off on his own a little bit, he's bringing it to a way that really compensates for that.
That's What It Takes from A Little South of Sanity. And I should point out, I looked it up, Russ Irwin was the keyboard player for Aerosmith from 97 right through to 2014. He played on A Little South of Sanity, which we just heard, You Gotta Move, Rockin' the Joint, which is another live album, Music from Another Dimension, which is the album they released, their last album in 2012, and two tracks from Rock for the Rising Sun, which is one of their one of their last live albums. John, what did you think of that live version of What It Takes?
Look, I want to bring us back to 1998, and you know, music was transitioning. Limp Bizkit and Korn were all the rage. And these were things that were happening that we're not so proud of, but they happened back then. And it feels like the crowd was not like the best thing going right now. Like, you know, to Scott's point that, you know, some things fell a little flat. I think the crowd was very flat. And I don't know if they were just washed out in the production, but we feel that this might be underproduced. So if this is underproduced, they didn't wash the crowd out. The crowd's just not there. And I blame the 1998 crowd for not filling the song a little bit more, because it deserves it. Like, the band brought it.
And we don't know where this, we don't know where this is recorded. I'm just kind of looking through on this album. A lot of the tracks are taken from like New York, around that area, like Albany, a couple from Seattle, but we don't know from what performance this version of this song was taken from.
Do we know where it was at in the set list? Was it towards the latter half? I'm just wondering if maybe there was a song that came before it that the crowd was just like fried themselves on. And then for this one, they really couldn't be present.
You know what? I will look that up on the album. It's right near the end. It's actually in between Do Looks Like a Lady, which I think usually ended the main set. So What It Takes could have kicked off the encore, according to the album, because it segues from that into Sweet Emotion. But while you guys chat, I'll look that up.
So, Scott, what we really need to do right now is we need to empower the listeners to find out if anybody was at one of these 1998 shows and find out why the crowd sounds like a wet fart.
Yeah, because I don't think with the crowd, I don't think it's a matter of it being a bad mix. I think they're not really responsive to the song. I would have thought at least they would have been singing along with the Let Go part.
Yeah, I'm completely blaming the music that comes out that year to just disenfranchising. I mean, I just watched the entire Woodstock special that blame these bands for lots of things that weren't their fault. So I'm going to blame these bands for the wet fart of a crowd we're listening to.
Yeah, I could definitely see what you're saying about the backing vocals could have been filled in by the crowd. I don't disagree with that. The only thing I would consider to the crowd's defense would be where it appears on the album doesn't necessarily mean that's where it appeared in the show. They might have done it in a different order. They don't always splice live albums together in the order that the show was done. But that might be the only defense that I think the crowd has, is that it might have just been placed somewhere where they weren't going to be at their prime to respond to it. Aerosmith plays a long show. You know, they're not out there for 45 minutes. They do like 2-hour shows.
Well, back then they did. Okay, now they're doing 90 minutes. It's 19 songs. Yeah. But back then, and I'm kind of looking, What It Takes was largely in the encore, following sometimes Big 10-inch record, sometimes Mamakin. It's usually the second song in the encore right before Sweet Emotion. So to John's point, it's kind of inexcusable that they're not really amped up at this point in the show.
Yeah. So,
and Scott, what really pisses me off here, is like, I just saw Elton John. He's like 75 years old. I just saw him a couple of weeks ago, and he got an entire geriatric crowd singing along to Crocodile Rock, doing the la 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 for 5 straight minutes. Wow. He got the crowd singing, right? The crowd was winded just getting to their seats, and halfway through this show, they were all in it and singing along. So a 1998 Aerosmith crowd, this is inexcusable.
Yeah, because you're talking, what, people in their 20s to 40s, probably?
Yeah, right? Like, let's put it in perspective. Like, it's not an Aerosmith crowd. Like, you go to the residency, and it's like people are, like, coughing or whatever in between their gambling, listening to Aerosmith. Fine, I get that. But, like, 1998, this is inexcusable.
Yeah. Especially if this was from Madison Square Garden, I would say, Madison Square Garden crowds are typically, you know, on their feet from beginning to end, and they're very noisy, rowdy crowds. So that would be disappointing too if this one was caught in Madison Square Garden.
Right, yeah. Right around that time in the Garden, I saw Page and Plant reunite in the Garden, and you know, nobody sat in their seat the whole show. Okay. So I've seen countless shows in the Garden. My first show was Meatloaf, and you know, people were up that entire show. That was 94. So, you know, people do that. So why they're not doing that here? I'm guessing they just told the crowd to sit on their hands. I have no excuse.
I've been looking through the set list. Largely What It Takes was part of the encore. So I guarantee it's not a Madison Square Garden show, because like Scott said, usually those are very boisterous crowds. I would expect, you know, where is Aerosmith not that popular? Maybe like Midwest? I don't know. I'm not really, big on America.
I can't imagine there's a place they're not popular.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Wait. But your question that you're asking us, Corey, is where in America are Aerosmith tickets sold that Aerosmith fans buy Aerosmith tickets that go to the show and they're not popular at their own show?
Not as popular. There's a lot of, like, we've all been to concerts with dead crowds, right? Like, I remember seeing Queen and Adam Lambert in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and it was the deadest crowd I'd ever seen. Nobody even got up and sang Love of My Life, which John was referencing earlier, the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert. He was doing Love of My Life, and he had 80,000 people at the palm of his hand. Saskatoon was it landed like a wet fart. Nobody gave a fuck. It was terrible.
I mean, both Scott and I are from Detroit and New York, respectively, and it doesn't surprise me that Saskatoon was kind of a dead crowd. How about you, Scott?
It gets cold up there.
Right.
It's true.
It's kind of like Fargo, North Dakota. Like I would imagine, like their hands are like in their pockets or in the hand warmers or ice fishing or whatever they do around there.
Were they wearing toques at the show?
At the Queen show, probably. Yeah.
That's it. They're just too cold. But, you know, even it's interesting. I noticed this a while back, even going to the different Cirque du Soleil shows here in Vegas, you'll have crowds that cheer after every song. Then they'll start cheering when they were actually supposed to, because there was a miscue and they thought they were supposed to cheer because they thought the act was over. And then they'll just erupt at the end. They'll all be out of their seats, standing ovation. And then there's other times where it's just clapping and nobody gets up at the end. It's a really weird thing.
It is, and same with Saskatchewan, which is nowhere near Las Vegas, but I referenced that Saskatoon show, which was really bad, but then I saw Metallica in Saskatoon, and that crowd was on their feet and jumping and singing the entire night. It's just weird how that works, and I imagine being in Las Vegas, because you get all these bands through all the time, like Aerosmith doing a big residency in Las Vegas. Maybe you guys are a little spoiled. In Saskatchewan, we don't get fucking anybody coming up here. So I remember when the Rolling Stones came in the late 90s, it was like front page news. They had to add a second show because we never get bands of that ilk. Whereas in New York and in Vegas, you guys get all those acts all the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But also, and I don't know so much about New York, but I know here people will come here to see that band. So we do get the local crowds, but we also get a lot of tourists that come up to see, you know, if Aerosmith is playing five nights here, people are coming from California and New Mexico and Arizona. So there is a good amount of tourists in that crowd as well. But yeah, I do feel very lucky to live in a place where, you know, bands might skip Denver, they might skip Phoenix, but very few bands skip Vegas.
About 12 years ago, I went to a little venue around here called Jones Beach, which is the southern beach here on Long Island. I saw one of the most raucous crowds I've ever witnessed in New York. You know, Corey says we're spoiled or whatever. We get up for everybody. You know who we got up for that night? James Taylor.
Well, who is known for his rowdy crowds, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know what Corey's talking about. We get up for everybody around here.
Which is great. Like I said, I saw Queen and Adam Lambert in Saskatoon, dead crowd. I saw Queen and Paul Rogers in Minneapolis. The crowd was into it from the very beginning, and it was one of the best concert experiences I ever had. And I went and saw Def Leppard in Las Vegas, traveled there, met the band, did the whole thing during their residency. Fantastic crowd, had the time of my life.
Excellent. Yeah, it's nice that we do the residencies here, because you get four or five chances to see the band. And a lot of times they'll do meet and greets that they might not do, because sometimes they got to fly straight from a show to the next town and they don't get to do them. So it's good to have a little bit of, a buffer where you can get some extras.
Well, and Aerosmith currently going through residency, it affords them the opportunity to change up the set list. When they're on tour, they hardly ever change it up. They have a couple of swing songs that they might substitute in, but on a residency, you know, they might completely change the set from one night to another. And we talked about this on the last show, John. We looked at the what they had posted as a potential set list and all their alternates. There was just as many alternates as songs on the set list. So whichever night you go, you're going to get a totally different show.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have a lot of songs, Corey, so they have a lot of
options. That's true. That is true.
I do want to point out one more thing about this song, and I find it especially funny that people are playing this at weddings. But, you know, there's the line in there at the end of the chorus where he talks about, you know, are you hurting as much as I am when you think of me? I can't remember the exact line now, but what people tend not to think about, even when they're writing the lyrics to these kinds of songs, is that they're probably not hurting that much over you because they left you a long time before they actually left you. You're writing this because this is fresh for you. Oh, there it is. Tell me you ain't dying when you're crying for me. Yeah, she's probably not, just so you know. she left you months ago. You just didn't know it. And, you know, you're just finding this out now. So to you, the wound is fresh. But you're hoping because it's hurting you that it's hurting her as much, but it's probably not.
Man, there's Scott bringing down the whole room right at the end of the show.
Well, did you just, it's not you, it's me, Steven Tyler?
not really.
He totally but did.
I always find lines like that in songs interesting because you think it's just, this just happened, so this must be just as bad for them, but it's probably not. And you hope it is, because you, as much as you want them back and you want this all to work out, you kind of want them to hurt a little bit like you are.
Oh yeah. And like you said, they never ever do. John, any final words on What It Takes?
Look, you tipped our hand when you said this is one of our favorite songs in Aerosmith. I think it's going to be on our live album for a long time. I think, you know, the filler and the crowd might hurt it in the long run, but the opening to this song, you're going to be hard pressed to find a better opening to a live song that we're going to put on this tape.
I agree. And I think that's maybe the only live version that was officially released by Aerosmith. So we don't have a lot of options when it comes to this absolutely classic song. Scott, I'm just assuming you're cool with its place on the live side of our new mixtape.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny too, because I told you when I had first picked the song, I was kind of hoping that we pulled this one because then we would have something for your new format, which would be really cool. But honestly, if we'd have picked any of them, I'd have been happy. But I really like this live version. I think it's fantastic.
I agree. And like John said, the crowd's a little flat, but the band I thought killed it. There is a live version from Rockin' the Joint. If you get the Target exclusive CD, they did Living on the Edge and What It Takes. I don't have that. John, if you can find that somewhere, that'd be great. But there's maybe another opportunity to hear this song live.
Are you giving me homework, man?
Yep, 100%.
I think we established I don't do any work on this podcast, and that everything that happens is your fault.
Well, we've added Scott now as a co-host, so about time you pull your weight.
No, Scott's here to just exact blame on you too, so don't worry about it. Now we can double down on it.
I thought it was just the eye candy for an audio podcast.
I feel like I have an ally now. I won't have John pushing me around all the time.
Ooh, the dynamics have changed.
It's 2-on-1 now. But it's not going to stop John from masturbating. Scott, where can the fine folks find you online?
Well, I am all over the place. You can listen to my podcast. I have Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast, as well as the Haskincast Podcast, where I do album reviews and celebrity interviews and different people in the entertainment business. And you can also find me on my website at scotthaskin.com.
Perfect. And John, where can the folks find you?
I mean, you can find me here on this podcast. You can find me on another podcast with Corey where we talk about theme music, Backtrack's theme music. Sometimes you can find me annoying Mark Kammeyer on an Aerosmith podcast that I'll let Corey plug. And sometimes you can find me bothering our sponsor, Ken Knapsack, on his shows, though probably not as often as he'd like sometimes, but I got to get in there more.
Well, I tell you, you're probably referencing the Van Halen podcast, not the Aerosmith podcast, because you're on that currently as we speak.
You can also always find John in a puddle of his own juices.
That's right. And you can find me on the aforementioned Van Halen podcast and the podcast Will Rock, where we're breaking down the entire the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And you can find me on Backtrack Steam Music, where we're talking music from movies. And Little Birdie told me we have a rumor that maybe Scott Haskin is going to be on that show as well, talking about one of his favorite songs from a movie. Maybe give us a little tease for that, Scott.
I'm just going to say you're the best.
There you have it. We'll leave it at that, folks. On behalf of our guest, Scott Haskin, and John Mariano, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, we'll give the final word to Steven Tyler.